Let's continue. Welcome, gentlemen, to the second part of Fall 2016 Contemporary Halacha Review. Okay, drumroll. So what I'd like to do now is one of the harder shiurim, and that is the shiur of Beis Din and our kaos that Rabbi Reis gave. And we're basically going to put everything in about four boxes, maybe four and a half, four topics. So the introduction is the fact that we have to realize the pasuk says Eila Mishpatim Asher Tetzim Lifnehem. Eila means even if you're giving Eila Mishpatim, you're not allowed to put it Lifnehem in front of a Goyish Beis Din. And there are two aspects that Rashi points out. First of all, you're not allowed to be Miyaker by turning to them in the first place. You're being Miyaker Shem Elilim. And secondly, by saying that the Torah can't deal with it, you have to look for a foreign set of rules. That's a Chil Hashem. And there are nafkaminas between these two. The nafkaminas would be, let's say you want to use halacha, but going to their courts. So again, the fact that you're turning to them is itself Miyaker Shem Elilim. Even though you're not, in the Lashon of the Rambam, Meirim Yad B'Torah Smosh, you're willing to use halacha, but you're going to their courts. That already elevates them. On the other hand, let's say you have a Beis Din that says they're going to use the secular law. So you're going to Beis Din, you're not Miyaker Shem Elilim, you're going to your local Orthodox rabbis, but you're being Mechal Hashem by saying that Torah is not equipped to deal with this. So you sort of have different permutations where you see the need for both aspects of the prohibition of Erkos. Keep in mind, Tashbit says that this is not just an Isra of Avodah Avodah Zarah, it's to all Goyim, because even though there's only Miyaker Shem Elilim, if you go to another religion, but a secular or a non-Avodah Avodah Zarah might not be Miyaker Shem Elilayim, but it's still at the same time Chil Hashem of Meirim Yad B'Torah Smosha, by saying that our Torah doesn't provide sufficient guidance. That was just a word of introduction. Let us begin this year. Now, the Torah says, Lifnehem, we know that you're allowed to make a Tanai. Rabbi Yehuda says you can make a Tanai by Mominus. The question is, can you make a Tanai to be able to go to a non-Jewish court? So there are two aspects of the pasuk, lefnehem lo lefnei ha'akum, not to go to Erkos. There's also lefnehem lo lefnei hadiotos, to not go to unqualified Jews. So you should know that that tanai that one might make with his partner, with his counterpart, will work. You're allowed to make a tanai to appear before Jewish hadiotos. However, the tanai does not work to appear before Ovdei Kochavim. So therefore, even if both the sides agree to go to Goyim, to appear before a Goyim, that would be Masa Masha Kaz Batorah, and the Tanai would be Batel. The reason for that is because appearing before a non-Jewish court is not a Davar Shebe Mamon. It's a Tanai on an Isser, it's considered an Isser, and therefore it would be Masa Masha Kaz Batorah. If both parties appear to go to Beis Din, but they want to enable the Beis Din to follow secular law, in general, we'll get to more specifics soon, that's Machlokas, Sma, and Taz, whether or not one could go to Beis Din, but empower them to follow secular law. Let's talk about the Yesod. Now we're going to start the main point. The main point is the following Rashba. The Rashba is the foundation of how to look at our kaos and how to look at exceptions to when I can go and when I can't go to Erkos, and when I could accept upon myself to different kinds and different laws and different statutes. The Rashba's talk about a case of a woman who had a dowry, big dowry, she died and her kids died. So according to Halacha, who's supposed to take her dowry? Her husband's Yoresher. But they lived in a community where the father would be Yoresh's daughter, and here the father wants his money back because this guy is no longer related to him anymore, so he wants his money back. So when the Rashba is dealing with this case, the Rashba is sozer himself numerous times, whether on one hand he says that, oh, we follow Umdana, and you can make a Tanai by Davar Shebe Mamon, which sounds like you could be masna to go to a court. On the other hand, he says with very harsh terms, Chas v'shalom, you can't be like the Goyim, you're uprooting the all of Hilchot Yerusha, and he sounds like he's going back and forth. So there's machlok, gigantic, ranging machlokas with at least seven mahalachim, how to understand his back and forth, when you can and when you cannot go to a court and when you have to stay in a base. So we'll go through all seven very quickly. Beis Yosef, Maran, says that the different, the chiluk, when you can and when you can't, is that the Rashba says it's aser to go to Dayane Goyim, but Dine Goyim are okay. So you could agree to go to use secular law, as long as it's in a Jewish Beis Din. That's the first mahalak to demystify the Rashba. Second mahalak is really, what's your motivation? Are you doing it because you happen to want this specific, you like this law, or is it that you want to just copy the Goyim and be like everybody else? Emancipation, we're like Goyim, let's do things their way. That's a problem. Third mahalak, Rav Ezra Basri, I think he's a Dayan Eretz Yisrael, is that the whole problem is if you're going to uproot the Torah such that you're doing it in a communal way, but if you're doing it individually, just for yourself, you and your partner want to, you know, work with this Goyish law, or a set of laws, that would be okay. You're not undermining it. The Zalman Nechemiah Goldberg says the two aspects in this Rashba, the one that's Asher Mutter, is if you're trying to be okay, a whole body of law, you want to just not have Hilchas Yerusha apply to you. That's not cool. But if you want to just one point, one little Nikuda within the general corpus of that area of law, that would be Mutter. Okay, we're going to skip that. The Minchas Tzvi says the issue is not following the law, the secular law, but it's mentioning the fact that it is a secular law. So you can't say, I want New York State Statute 423, subtitle 11. You could say, I would like these 100 aspects, these 100 points of law to apply to me. They happen to all be found in, you know, Statute 7, subtitle 11, whatever I might have said. Finally, the final is the way to deal with this Rashba, is that there are two points in this Rashba. One is talking about... So I only said five ways to deal with the Rashba. Fine. It happens to be that the English Moshe writes that even though you might not be able to use Gaisha law, but if there's certain customary commercial practices, that's not called following a different kind of law. That might just be following Minhag HaMakom. That would be okay. Now, let's say you know... Let's talk about the next topic. The next topic is Mishpat Ivri, which was a subject of great consternation, is that a word, to the early Rabbanim of the Medina. Two people, and they want to say that, hey, we'll go to the Jewish Dayanim, but we're going to have this other set of law called Mishpat Ivri, which is a mix of Roman law, English law, everything, Turkish law, everything except Jewish law, basically. So can you be involved in that? So if we look at the different understandings of the Rashi that we just finished learning, if the whole point is that you can't, the Beis Yosef's chilek, the Beis Yosef was mechai between following secular law is a problem. Tayori goyim, so that might be okay, but over all the other explanations, it sounds like it's a problem. For example, if you're saying that you want this law but not that law, well, here you're going, you're in a whole corpus of law that's not according to halacha, according to Rav Ezra Basri, that you're trying to, you can't have a whole community accepted, here you have the whole country accepting it. If it's going to uproot a whole area of halacha, well, you're uprooting a whole area of halacha. If it's if you look through the different cases, you'll find that most of them, most of the chilukim and the Rashba do not fit with Mishpat Ivri. And therefore, based on that, the vast majority, let me rephrase that, every Adam Gadol has come out in strong words saying that Mishpat Ivri is not permitted to be adjudicated between two Jews. What is the suggestion? Menachem Elon suggested a somewhat halachic basis that perhaps might permit Mishpat Ivri, you know, Mishpat Ivri meaning the Israeli court system, based on the concept of Dayanim or Erkol Shebesuria. The Rashba in the Shas Tshuv has talked about scenarios where you live in a small town, and there are no qualified Dayanim, no poskim, no great gedolim, and you don't have internet you don't have FaceTime with based in somewhere else. So you just take the three upstanding, you know, respectable people in the community, and they do the best they can. And as long as the Rashba says, as long as their decisions are based on their own common sense, they're not covered to secular law, that's okay. So Menachem Elon suggests, so every, you know, court in Eretz Yisrael is like Erkol Shebesuria. The post can reject that argument because, and especially Menachem Elon brings as a Meiri who says that they're even allowed to look in their law books, even though they're doing it with their own mind, but they could do it based on consulting their law books. The rejection is twofold. First of all, that heter of Erkol Shebesuria is only when there are no Dayanim. In Eretz Yisrael, there are Dayanim. Secondly, Chazon Ish points out, The heter is only that they could use their common sense to adjudicate a case, but they're not allowed to be bound by a foreign law code. And even when the Duke and the Meiri, that they're allowed to look in their books, that just means if they want for their own edification to look in their law books, they're permitted, but not that they should be bound, and therefore, Rav Avadya Yosef, so he pays a frank, Rav Herzog, rejected Mishpat Ivri, and that would be an issue in both being a judge as well as being a lawyer in the Eretz Yisrael Dika court system. Let's finish that point. What about a different issue? Let's say you want to go for arbitration, meaning you're not bound by a secular lands law, but let's say you're an architect, you're a builder, you want to go before the American Architecture Arbitration Board. They are just deciding what the minhag ha'sochrim in that industry is. There, Rebbe Kaveger says that's okay. What if you all just stop on to go to non-Jewish arbitrators? It's not part of a court system, but it's arbitration. So arbitration in front of Jews, that you're allowed to both agree to. We saw that already. You can make a tanai to go to Hedyotos. It's permitted. What about arbitration to Goyim? Here, the Shach and the Aruch HaShulchan say that it would be permitted as long as they make their own decisions. They're not bound by a law system. Therefore, arbitration will be permitted. The last section of this shir is going to be talking about when is Beis Din permitted to send somebody to court. We're going to have, good 5, 6, 7 cases. The first one, the most important one, is the nitva, the obvious one. When your opponent, the nitva, you want to go to court, and the nitva refuses to appear in Beis Din. So what is this based on? There are two sources for the heter of going to Arkos when need be. The Mishnah again talks about if a person is refusing to give a get ma'usa. Ma'usa, the Gemara suggests one way to accomplish a get ma'usa is if he goes to a get ma'usa in a geisha court, it's possible, but if they just beat him, obviously where the law of the land would permit such a thing, of course. So get ma'usa, they gayim would be okay. So that's one source. Another source is the Gemara Baba Kama. Gemara Baba Kama says that if you have a fight with somebody, you call to your friend and he doesn't answer, Ramei, throw him against the wall. So the Rosh says, what does that mean that if your friend doesn't answer, you throw him against the wall? It means you call somebody out to go to Beis Din and he refused to come, so throw him against the wall, throw him again into, throw him into court. And if you think of the rationale for these heterim where the nitva refuses to come makes a lot of sense. The whole problem is that you're miyaker shema lila, or that you're saying that the Torah can't deal with it. But if indeed the only reason why you're going is because he's refusing to go, so you're not violating either of those violations. And even more so, the issue is that you're undermining halakha, but when you have the Beis Din telling you, in this case you can go, referring you to the court, Beis Din is referring you to the court, so it's ki'ilu, the court is the yada richta, and it will not be a violation of either Miyakir Shemalilim nor Meiri Yad Batoris Moshe. Okay, so that was the first scenario where you're allowed to take somebody to court. That is, the Nitzah refuses to go to Beis Din. Second case, what happens if somebody took you to court and... Right, I take you to court and I lost, and now I want to go to Beis Din. So here, there's Machlokas, whether 2 days in the Ramah, whether I can go to Beis Din. Now we pass in that you can't go to Beis Din. But what happens in the following scenario? Let's say a defendant was schleft to court, and he didn't want to go to court. Could he now go to Beis Din after he was schleft to court? Well, here the Masham says it really depends on what his reaction was. If when he was schleft to court, he went along and he lost. So now he can't just go to Beis Din and try to, see if he can do better Beis Din. But if when he was taken to court originally, he didn't want to go, he made a bacha, he tried to get a hazmana from the Beis Din, it didn't work, then maybe afterwards, maybe he would be able to go to court, to Beis Din, to try to do better afterwards. Okay. Third case that you're allowed to take somebody to court is if it's Yadua, that he's just not going to appear in Beis Din. You have to figure out, nowadays a lot of people go to litigation, maybe litigation is much more widespread, arbitration is much more widespread, so don't be so sure that everybody's going to refuse to go. So if you know that somebody's not religious, the case of Kadoshim says that would be, if you know he's not going to go, because he's not religious, doesn't care about Beis Din, so that would be a case you could just go straight directly to a court. Next scenario is that, let's say you don't want to get a psak deh, but Beis Din already paskin, but you need to enforce the psak deh to get him to pay. There, you could go straight to court to help the court enforce the psak din. Another case where there's a shaila, if you're allowed to do this or not, is if you're only taking him to court, not because you're actually planning to take him to court, but just as a scare tactic to get him to go to Beis Din. So that's a machlokas if that is permitted or not. The sixth case that you're allowed to take somebody to court is if it's a chov barer, right? There's a tuition agreement, parents aren't paying tuition. So then the yeshiva could take the parents to court without going to Beis Din first, according to the Maharsha. But that's sometimes difficult to rely on because sometimes you think it's a chov barer, but the nitva thinks it's not so barer, that's why they're not paying you. I had a case. An arbitration case. Two people in the community, they said they didn't want to go to Beis Din because it wasn't such a big, it was a $1,500 dispute, and pay the Beis Din fees or go to court. They just said, okay, you decide it for us. So each one was so convinced. One was convinced he didn't owe a penny, and the other convinced it's not even a shaila why he has to, why he shouldn't be paid the whole amount. So I gave a number in the middle, and of course, you know that both sides are going to say, but I shouldn't pay a penny, and the other person said, I should be getting everything. So sometimes people have, they look at the same situation in very different perspectives. Also a good lesson to always listen to two sides before, especially be it shalom bayis, be it, parents and kids, be it finances. There are always two sides to a story, and when you hear one, they always sound right until you hear the other. So, good thing to know. Okay, and the last thing, two more things that you're allowed to go directly to court is that if you just want to freeze the assets. I didn't know this, but that's called TRO, Temporary Restraining Order. So the Gros Moshe says that Beis Din doesn't have the ability to do that. So what are you going to Beis Din to do? So you can go to court to get such an injunction to freeze their assets. Finally, if you want to bring a goy to court, you're assuming that he's not going to go to Beis Din, so you can take him to court. If there's a chance he'll be willing to go to Beis Din, then you have to talk and take him to Beis Din. Bezes Hashem, we should all be Zochot to Shalom. Okay, that's the end of that shir. Let's now talk about Rabbi Adler's shir on two points. One or two points about piyutim, and then two or three points about shofar. Basically, two points about piyutim, we'll say that why piyutim are nice, and then we'll say why there was a lot of movement not to accept piyutim. Piyutim became nice and popular. Shibala Lekut says because there's a certain, when you say the same thing every day, it gets boring, comes rote. When you do different things for different days, it enhances the tefillah. Sefer Itim has a very interesting perspective. He says that there were times in history that we weren't able to learn Torah. So therefore, the Chachamim injected into the piyutim many, many halachos so that even in times when there was an issue, there was the decree that we couldn't learn Torah, we would still end up knowing what we have to know through the amira of the piyutim. Next. Why was there opposition to piyut? So we're going to mention two halachic reasons and a number of hashkafic reasons. Halachically, the Rambam says, fascinating, that the reason why you shouldn't get involved in piyut, in inserting piyut during davening, is because your osik b'mitzvah, you're davening. So if your osik b'mitzvah, you're patur min ha-mitzvah. What does patur min ha-mitzvah mean? Rishonim say it doesn't just mean you don't have to do the other mitzvah. If you're learning, you're sitting in shir, you don't have to give tzedakah. It's more than that. It's a bizayon. If you're doing one mitzvah and you get involved in something else, it's bizayon to the first mitzvah. It's an iser to do the second mitzvah. There's no chiyuv, and what are you getting involved in when you're doing something? You're not a chiyuv, and if you're involved in a mitzvah race, therefore it's an iser, therefore you shouldn't say piyutim because it's violating the iser of a second mitzvah, part of a mitzvah.
What separate mitzvah is piyutim?
Abbas Hashem? Yes, Hashem? Vekas? Because it's learning Torah, but Avas Hashem maybe. I think Sefer Yireyim says it sings Yireyim or Reim, something with a like Reish Aleph Mem. I think I once saw it says that sings Mios is a cube of Avas Hashem. Could be. Okay, that's the Rambam. The Rambam says it concerns Osi Mitzvah Patim and Mitzvah. The Shulchan Aruch and the Tur are bothered by what we would have, more naturally said, that it could be a question of Hefsek. We know what the Mishnah says. That the brachos are established, either bracha rucha, bracha ksara. So it sounds like the text is set by kachi knesek dola, and playing with that would be against the Mishnah. That sounds like everything is set. Haritosa says that the only problem of changing, the only problem of nabi marich ksara and maktsir narucha is when you change when you're actually changing the chasima, or you're adding a chasim, or you're taking away a chasim, if you're changing a bracha arucha to a bracha tzara, meaning you're adding a Baruch Atah Hashem at the end, you're taking away a Baruch Atah Hashem from there, but if you just add some lines without changing the Chasima, that Tosfos says might not be an issue. Okay. Those were two halachic objections. And the Ibn Ezra, which by the way I actually used in my Koheles shiur, because in Ibn Ezra and Koheles, I was thumbing through Koheles and I see this gigantic Ibn Ezra. I look at it and I said, wow, that's the Ibn Ezra that Rabbi Adler spoke about in contemporary halacha. So I went through it a little more deeply and I discussed it in my Koheles shiur, because Ibn Ezra and Koheles. So Ibn Ezra basically goes on a tirade why he hates Rabbi Elazar HaKalir. You and I shouldn't do that, but if you're the Ibn Ezra, I guess you could. And he says four basic general concerns that he doesn't like about Rabbi Elazar HaKalir, specifically his style of piyut. First of all, there are a lot of grammatical mistakes, wrong gender usage. That's the first nekuda. Secondly, he takes midrashim very literally, and many times the Ibn Ezra says the midrashim are mishalim, archidos, they're not supposed to be understood literally, and they're incorporated literally into the tefillas. Third of all, there's a mixture of Aramaic, Hebrew, other languages, and we know that tefillah is supposed to be, you know, Zach Venoki, Kosis Lamar. We see the Rambam, by the way, says the reason why Ashi Kodesh HaGadola instituted tefillah, the formal tefillah that we know, why they wrote this in the first place, was because in the Golas, the Bnei Yisrael couldn't speak a nice, clear language, neither in Hebrew nor in whatever language they spoke at home. So they didn't have a good language, so that's why Hazal had to make a tefillah. And as you see that, you shouldn't say things if it's not in a clear, pure language. And finally, he says, the Ibn Ezra says, we don't understand what he's saying, so why should you waste your time saying piyutim you don't understand? Okay. Maral says, yeah, I know that you don't understand. I know it's not written in the normal way, but it's the dafka written in a different... These are two defenses that we're going to suggest for piyut. Of course it's different and it's hard, but the point is, it's to elevate you. Sometimes you want to convey an emotion, it doesn't always have to, you know, you don't hire an engineer or an accountant to bring out your emotions. You hire a musician, sometimes it might not be in the right language, might not be perfect, sometimes this might not be perfect, but it brings to a heightened emotion. Avas Hashem, Simcha. Fine. Okay, let's now talk about shofar. Shofar of course, question whether Shvarim Trua is two kolos, is one kol, and Afkumina if it has to do with two neshima, so one neshima, if you call them separately, if it's not called separately or not. Even if you assume it's two kolos, it might still have to be b'neshima achas. No, I'm sorry, even if you hold this one kol, it might still have to be in two neshimas. Fine. Now, the main point that we got in this shir on shofar is that the length of the tekiah is a function of how long the trua that it is surrounding. Meaning, if you have a trua in the middle, the length of the tekiah has to be at least that long. If you have a shvarim in the middle, then the tekiah, before and after, it has to be that long. If you have a shvarim trua, then presumably the tekiah surrounding it has to be that long. So therefore, the shvarim trua, which is the longest in the middle, it has to have the longest tekiah. The trua, which is the shortest in the middle, could have the shortest tekiah surrounding it. So this could bring us to an issue, because what happens if you do a shvarim? This I was almost worried once I had this issue. The person did the shvarim like this, to each one of those three shvarim. To that's long enough to be a tkiya, because a tkiya has to be as long as a minimal shvarim. A minimal shvarim is to, which let's say is a few. I don't want to get into Chumitin, but I was very, very nervous that his shvarims were as long as each third of the shvarim. I mean, each kol was as long as a tekiah. That was very frightening. So that could become a tekiah. You have to be careful with that. But sad lahakil is that we look at it in that section. Meaning, if I'm doing a shvarim shua, so I'm only concerned that shever might be long to that one might be as long as, it's only going to be a problem if it's as long as the tekiah of a shvarim trua. Shvarim trua is a very long tekiah because it's as long as a shvarim trua together. So that's the only time you have to be worried about. However, when do you get into if you have a trua? What's a trua? Three colors is a trua. That was a trua. So how long does the tekiah have to be? That was a kosher tekiah. So what's going to sometimes happen is this a worry? If it was a kosher tkiya, because that's just three kolos, three shemitim long, three. So I was makri for the first year this year, and the previous makri in the shul told me the way he does it. If you look at my hand on the desk, the way he does it, he counts. Some people look at clocks at seconds, but if you sort of look at the hands of the rabbi as they do as their makri, you know, every truma. So even if it's a tekiya, I measure the length of the tekiya, basically how many times I could, you know, for those of you who can't see my hands, you know, knowing that for the shvarim trua, we want to get 18 kolos, 9 for shvarim, 9 for trua. Shvarim trua is 18, so the tekiya before and after should also be a length of 18. So basically, you want to do this 3 times, then 3. 5 times 3, right? 5, 10, 15, and then 3 more. That's 18. You want to, the amount of time it takes you to tap, you know, 18 taps should be the length, the minimal length of your tekiya. So it's a little bit less disheartening for the Baal Tekiya than, you know, looking at him with a, you know, with a stopwatch in hand. That's a little... What? The kula is that we look... Okay, the problem could come out. I just said that you could have a true as short as 3 termita. So therefore the shortest tekiya could be 2. That's really a kosher tekiya. If you say that, then shvarims are already longer than two. I just did 3 tekiyas. That's a problem. The kula is that we look at the tekiyas not just in a vacuum, but rather relative to whatever is in the middle of it. And therefore, if you have a short thing in the middle, then the tekiya could be short. So if you have a true in the middle, then the tekiya could be short. If you have a shvar and true in the middle, then the tekiyas will be very long. And anything shorter than that won't be a tekiya. We usually try that a trua should be 9 of these minimal lengths. Although Rashi says even 3 is already a trua that you yotzei, which will bring us to an issue which we'll say in a minute. The Mishnah Berurah sets down just lechatchila, you should try to make sure lechatchila. This is the Mishnah Berurah's klalim, where it just says how to do everything lechatchila. You should make your tekiyas of your tashrat 18 kolos each. So that the shran true is 9 and 9, so the keys are 18, and your shevesh should be 9, and therefore what we have to be, if you do a trua and you started your trua with you started with a longer kol, that could be a problem because that might be a hefsik between the tekiya that it's supposed to open with and the trua that's supposed to be on its heels. We'll finish this shiur and then we'll finish today with the following lamdish point. Oh, one point before we get to the lamdish point. How, in terms of neshima achas and shtei neshimas, it's a machlokas, whether shvarim trua is neshima achas or two neshimas, as we pointed out. And even if you hold two neshimas, is it two neshimas, mamash, two different breaths, or just the time that it takes to do two breaths? Now, ideally, the Shulchan Aruch says, so you know what we do with this machlokas? We cover both grounds. The first half, the tekiyas de miyushav, you do neshima achas, and the tekiyas de meumad in Shmoneh Esrei, you do in shtei neshimas. The Ramah says, though, no, you do everything, all 100 in two neshimas. And the Mishnah Berurah says, we shouldn't really follow this Ramah. It makes more sense to follow the pshara of the Shulchan Aruch, covering both shitas and the Rishonim, covering your base, doing half and half. Now, this is the concluding point, and then we'll stop the shiur for today. If the kol is not me'inyan that set, then it's going to be a hefsek. So, for example, if you're doing a tekiya shvarim, and for whatever reason you put a trua in the middle, that trua in the middle that wasn't supposed to be there was a hefsek before the shvarim, and therefore disconnected the shvarim with the tekiya that was supposed to immediately precede it, and that hefsek is going to invalidate the whole set, and you have to start again. Because you need the tekiya to immediately precede the thingy in the middle. So based on this, we're going to have the following issue. Let's say you're doing a trua. Tekiya, trua, tekiya. You're doing your trua, but you messed up the trua and you lost your breath and you did ta-ta-ta, 3 blasts when you wanted to get to 9. Ta-ta-ta, and you really want to get ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta. So when you did those 3, what just happened? You were yotzei according to Rashi. It was a full trua according to Rashi. Now you go and do your full one, your 9 one, to be yotzei properly. wait a second, but you had a trua in the middle, intermediating between, I don't know if that's a word, but breaking up, being mafsik between the tkia and the proper trua. So did that three, that little Rashi trua, which we don't really use Rashi, did that mess you up in this following trua in the middle of the proper trua that you just did? So the Das Torah is at the Masham.
Yeah.
Masham says that there should be an incredible geshmak alumdus. He says, you didn't want to be yotze with that three, right? You didn't have kavana and latzeis with that three because you really wanted a nine. So since you didn't have kavana, on the first day when trua, when tkiyas shofar is midaraisa mitzvahs ain't shechas kavana. So therefore you were yotze. Therefore that counted, that short one counted as its kol, because even though you didn't have kavana for it, it still counted. And therefore it will be a hefsek between the prior tkiya and the proper trua. You messed up. You didn't do the proper trua. You have to start again. However, on the second day, which is only drabanan, we know that the drabanan is mitzvahs ain't shechas kavana, and therefore, I'm sorry, midrabanan mitzvahs tzrichos kavana, and since you were lacking kavana in that tiny little first trua, you weren't yotze, it wasn't the kol, and therefore it's not a hefsek, and you can rely on the previous tkiya. Right, midrabanan, you do not need kavana, and therefore, even though there was no kavana, it still counted as a kol, and therefore it's a hefsek. Did I just say that right?
So the second day it's a problem.
So the second day will be a hefsek. The first day,
the yotzik, since you weren't mechaping.
The second day it is a hefsek. So the second day you were yotze with that first one. Therefore it serves as a hefsek between the tkiya and the long nine one that will be right afterwards. The Sif Ezech Frank says no. Just because you didn't want to have a Rashi trua, it doesn't mean you didn't have kavana latzeis. You had kavana to be yotze mitzvah tkiya shofar, and you blew. The first one wasn't a great one, but you had kavana latzeis, and therefore it's always considered a hefsek, and therefore you will not be yotze, you have to start again. We have three shiurim, that's the end of today, I have to go. We have three shiurim left. We have yichud, we have mezuzah, we have dina d'malchus adina, and we have bris mila. So those, Bez Hashem, I'll email you, will either be on Monday or Tuesday. Podcast, everybody. And so again, people said that Tuesday at 12:30, no one has a problem with? Tuesday at 12:30?
Monday was
some people said it brings an opportunity.
I can't
right?
do
Who
Monday
has a problem with Tuesday?
You can't do Monday at 12:30 either.
Wait again. Who?
That's right, we can't do Monday 12:30.
You can't do Monday 12:30. Or one? Who can't do Monday? Who cannot do Monday at 12? Who cannot do Tuesday?
Why don't you just do it Thursday?
Okay.
The time is
okay, so we'll figure it out and we'll be in touch.
Postpone the meeting like one more week.
What's the difference?